नमस्ते।
गुड मॉर्निंग एवरीवन। आई'ड लाइक टू ब्रीफली टच अपॉन द सेम टॉपिक एज लास्ट टाइम बिफोर टेकिंग एनी क्वेश्चंस और इफ एनीवन वुड लाइक टू शेयर एनीथिंग दे विश टू। दिस टीचिंग ऑफ अद्वैता नॉट टू हैज इट्स फाउंडेशन ऑन द कॉन्सेप्ट ऑफ नॉन डुअरशिप। दिस इज द पेग एंड अ क्वेस्ट टू अंडरस्टैंड दिस क्लियरली एंड सी इट्स ऑपरेशन इन आर लाइव्स रिजल्ट्स in peace and harmony in daily living. Now, when the great sage Ramana Maharshi was asked, what is the purpose of life? His answer was, what else but to realize the self? Now, these might be big words for most of us. So to simplify it, for example, my teacher would say, the purpose of life is to let life flow in peace and harmony. And therefore, what delivers this, whether it is the realization of the self, the one self, S caps, not the small s, which is the ego. In both cases, as the Bhagavad Gita says, the ego deluded thinks I am the doer, and so are others. When this is understood at its core and lived, we find we are delivered. Joel Goldsmith had a very beautiful expression. Although his teachings were based on the Gospel of St. John, which basically means on the teachings of Jesus Christ, he said, when we give up the belief in two powers, the karmic law is nullified. When we give up the belief in two powers, the karmic law is nullified, which basically means there is only one power. This belief that there is a power apart from that one power, which is doing things to me, when this is given up, I have seen through the dualism of life that I was mired in. If we live this understanding that there is no power apart from God, which one could call the source, consciousness, or whatever other word one wishes to, then we find we are able to navigate through life's challenges in a far more effortless way than we used to earlier. You see, the ego has staked a claim on power, dominance and control, and even bestowed that on the other. That is the way the ego is structured, designed. And when this is seen, then the whole dynamic changes. A nullification of the karmic law means that the cause effect loop, which not only was I stuck in, but I was perpetuating action and reaction, action and reaction, lived in the realm of unawareness. Now, one could say, gets reversed. If we look at it in very simple terms, with a simple example, let's say I have a point of view and the person across me has the opposite point of view. Now, if I keep going on and on and on that my point of view is right, and I'm convincing the other to the point where I'm disturbing the harmony in the relationship by proving that the other is wrong, I am perpetuating the karmic loop in that sense. I am not allowing the other to be an expression of the same consciousness the way they have been designed, just as I have. So how much of our lives is going on and on in these karmic loops we are playing out in unawareness? And now when I see through the glorious light of non-doership that nobody is the doer of their actions, what happens? If I feel the need to express myself, I do so. But I am no longer convinced that I must convince the other of my point of view. Because I know there is only one truth, and both our points of view are perspectives on that one truth. So a sense of humility starts seeping in into my interactions in daily living. And I will be quite surprised to find that a touch of compassion starts arising. When I see that people cannot help being themselves, nor can I, compassion starts arising. Qualities which perhaps were alien to me earlier on are now revealing themselves. And that is why, as I mentioned last time, I would love to explore the law of karma, how it operates based on our scriptures, the teaching of Advaita and non-doership, and how karma, which earlier in our lives was my action and the other's action, reverts to simply pure action. Ramana Maharshi was asked that for the jnani, is it that all types of karma are nullified, or do some continue playing out? For example, according to our shastras, we all are living our lives based on a prarabdha karma, what is assigned to us by the divine will. From the stockpile of karma, the sanchit karma, a portion is assigned for this lifetime. And Bhagwan replied that when a man who has three wives dies, all the three wives get widowed at the same time. So we will delve deeper into this. Those who are interested in the topic of karma, I will keep a separate talk for this. Those who are not interested needn't suffer a talk. But I feel it's a very beautiful thing to understand. It's really enlightening in various perspectives. One more point I'd like to stress on is that we should not hesitate to ask questions and seek clarifications. After all, One of our koshas is the sheath of the mind. The mind is going to ask questions. There's nothing to feel embarrassed about, feel that we will be judged if we ask certain questions. The path of understanding, the path of jnana, is through the mind to the intellect and then further within. Once again, my teacher would say that there's so much confusion prevailing. So he would encourage people to ask questions, to get answers, clarifications. You see, because these questions are the questions of grace. It is a mind which is trying to figure out what life is about. It is not a mind which is just lost in the mundane and material and questioning things related to that. It is a mind which has realized, is there more to this than what I see, hear, taste, smell, and touch? So I start questioning. That is the start of the spiritual seeking. Those in whom spiritual inquiry and seeking is happening are truly blessed, because it has been their life's experience that true happiness cannot be found in this material world. If I derive my happiness from objects in the material world. All right. If anyone would like to ask a question or share something, then you can do so. Yes, Jagjot. Are you there, Jagjot?
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Hi, good morning, Gautam. How are you?
I am good by the grace of God. How are you doing, Jagjot?
I'm good too, by the grace of God. All good here.
Good, good.
So I would like to share something with you based on the talk you gave right just now. And my great grandfather, who lived in a village in Punjab, left his home in search of spiritual knowledge. And he left at a time when his wife and children were at a very dependent stage, I would say. And he didn't come back for many years. In fact, he came back after 30 years of seeking. And some revered him as a sage and took wisdom from him, while there was another section that called him unfaithful and the one who, you know, left his family and children in a difficult situation and left. However, his wife did not complain. But the society, yes, they did put labels of right and wrong on him. But he was quiet. And for a very long time, I was given this perspective that he did something which is not right, quote unquote right, in the worldly ways. But now, after listening to you and you know, going through this teaching, what I've come to realize is that there are so many forces acting on a human being, on the individual. And the human being is not at all in control of that. It is very difficult to actually know what is right and what is wrong. But yes, people do label it as right and wrong. And I think that comes from Rameshji's statement where he says the ego loves to assume. So I would like your perspective on that.
What other perspective could there be? You are so right that every action is judged as right or wrong because we are living in this polarity, you see. When there's the right, there's the wrong. We are in the realm of polarities and polaric opposites. And your grandfather's journey, which only he would know, got judged by society, you see. But as you rightly said, there are so many factors. Our mind is so limited. What were your grandfather's motivations? What was his background, conditioning, genetics, destiny? Only God knows. And he lived out his blueprint. So, and I like the word you used about him, that he was quiet. You see, that is for me a very big pointer. Nisargadatta Maharaj would say, realized people are very quiet. Now, he did not mean by being quiet only at the level of speech. He meant when the thinking mind is quiet. So it is quite apparent that as far as your grandfather is concerned, the sheer fact that his response was not one of defending his actions or convincing others, but just being quiet. I mean, it is very clear that he had a deep understanding of life and his quest. What were his motivations to leave the family when they were dependent on him? Who are we to judge and who are we to know? So if we can really navigate our boat through the waters of life, doing what we think is best in each situation, under each circumstance, and being true to ourselves in that sense, knowing that all actions have consequences. This is the realm of duality. All actions have consequences. Knowing that. So being prepared to face the consequences of our actions and not trying to fool ourselves that there will not be consequences of actions, knowing that we move ahead in our journey.
Thank you. Beautiful. And just one more question. In one of your talks, you said a very beautiful line, and that is, we actually don't know how to suffer. And that suffering has a profound impact on our lives, and that we learn more from our suffering than from happiness.
Yes, so true. But hopefully, we don't have to keep suffering to learn from suffering.
I think it is not about deliberately putting oneself in a place of suffering to claim that I can learn, but just, you know, if the life flows through like that, I think keeping that open attitude towards life, I think that's what Rameshji said. That's what I hear from you, sir.
Yeah, and mainly, I mean, most suffering comes unasked. So when it comes, dealing with it, you see. But now, on another note, since you're such a good singer, I hope you won't mind if I request you to sing a couple of lines for us. The new song you sent that was so beautiful, would you be able to, or you're not feeling like it's appropriate?
Sure, Gautam. I would like to sing, but can I sing a line from a bhajan, a very popular bhajan, very nice bhajan, which is very close to my heart.
Sure.
Okay. सुख के सब साथी दुख में ना कोई मेरे राम मेरे राम तेरा नाम एक साचा दूजा ना कोई
Beautiful. Thank you, Jagjot.
Thank you, Gautam. Thank you so much.
Heartwarming.
Thank you.
Thank you. Take care. Yes, Ganesh.
Pranam, Guruji.
Pranam.
So I work in a office where I'm the brand ambassador of Gautam
Oh God.
Sachdev Guruji.
Brand ambassador of the teaching.
I have a co-worker with me. So he's a spiritually inclined aspirant from the beginning, and he goes to Ramachandra Mission from his earlier days. Now he's in his 50s. 2 years back, his wife had died in an accident where he's also driving in the same way. And just few days back, I think last month, he's crossing his road with his mom. And there is a driver who is very drunk maybe, and come like crashed her mom, like his mom. And his mom is the only support system he's having. The only support system he's having. Now he have asked me to ask you to say something to him.
So, Ganesh, from what you have said, did he lose his wife in the accident?
Yeah, he lost his wife and also he lost his mother,
That's
both
very
of them.
sad. That's
Now,
very, very tragic and very sad.
and he's like literally alone. But he knows that it is the will of God that he's doing it all. But he just wants you to ask you, please ask your Guruji once.
You see,
That's what he.
Ganesh, some people are born to face tougher destinies than others. The sheer fact that his wife and his mother have been taken away from him through acts of God means he has come with a tough destiny to face. Now, telling someone, giving them words of wisdom would be like putting salt on an open wound. The only thing to say is, may God give you the strength to deal with such challenges. Now, the only difference that can happen is that a teaching can take away the psychological suffering related to these two incidents. It cannot take away the pain and the grief associated with them. When we have the total acceptance of the will of God, it does not mean we will stop grieving. That to such important relationships in one's life, the Divine Mother represented by the wife and the mother. So, what a teaching bestows is the annihilation of the thinking mind, which would get lost in a loop and create immense psychological suffering for the individual. Why me? Why did God do this to me? Does God hate me? What wrong have I done in life? You see, that is how our mind starts kicking in. And that is the way it is designed, rightfully so. Anyone would start questioning all this. But when deep down, I have understood that life does not make sense, most of it, then the mind gives up, you see. The mind, the barrier between us and our peace of mind collapses. And now is left to deal with what is in the moment. Here and now, in this moment, what is? And by and by, as the saying goes, time is the greatest healer. By and by, an acceptance, along with moments of immense grief, everything being witnessed as the functioning of the mind without it being judged. Right now, what someone like this person needs is emotional support. Let's be very pragmatic about this. This teaching of Advaita is not meant to make us into zombies who don't feel anything. This is really a misconception. And the feminine is emotion, wife and mother. So his friends, people like you, by just being there for him, could offer that to him and help him by holding his hand through the journey of life. You see, it was Shirdi Sai Baba who once said, and this is very important, it's extremely important. I have read it in Narasimha Swami's book on Shirdi Sai Baba's charters and sayings. He said, even I cannot alter everyone's prarabdha. Most people have to face what they have to face. So someone questions Baba. Then how is it you know, you tell a couple who comes to you that they'll have a child? He said, because I've seen it. Does it mean I've told all childless couples that they'll have a child? So we do not know the forces of karma, what events are there in our blueprint. As I said, some destinies far harsher than ours. We must thank God for his tender mercy. And so that is all I have to offer. I would not tell this person everything is an illusion, you must not react. All that is really a heap of nonsense. It is his setbacks, his challenges, his losses, which will give him the life experiences that he is meant to learn. That is how the divine operates. But I do feel, no matter how bad the circumstance, that one must consider one's glass half full and not half empty. Everything is a learning about life, about loss. Loss is the greatest teacher. I keep saying that. Loss is the greatest teacher. And our wish perhaps should be that, dear God, do let me learn whatever lessons I am meant to learn in this lifetime through whatever comes my way. So be open enough to not get sucked into this to the point of the darkness of ignorance being overwhelming, but to see, understand, feel all aspects of life and living. What is transient? What is not transient? Who is left alone ultimately? I feel alone when I lose my loved ones. So what is that which does not depend on others and is always ever present? You know, I have mentioned this a few times before. When I was, I think, 29 or 30, I'm not quite sure, I had this question I had raised. For me, it was a very important relationship in the early days of my spiritual journey. And I was flying down to meet Eckhart Tolle, who was at that time giving a talk in Chennai. Then we went together with him to Thiruvanamalai. That same morning, my grandmother's cremation took place. You know, Ganesh, my grandmother was in hospital in the ICU. And we knew she was not going to be there for long, but we didn't know when the exit would be. And I had this trip coming up. This was playing on my mind. And it so happened, I didn't cancel my flight. It was in the afternoon. It so happened that she passed away in the morning. So I could attend her funeral and then go to the airport. Thankfully, by God's grace. Now, prior to that, very small time gap, my dog, who was with me for 17 years, had passed. So I was very fond of my grandmother. I was very fond of my dog. So I was in grief. Now, I had also realized something, because I started seeing death from a very early age, that when a person died, the closer the person was to me, I would sense this vacuum, a vacuum. I would feel it inside the heart, you know. One was at the physical level, like my dog would sit always in one spot as I entered the house after a working day in the evening, and he was not there now. So you sense the absence of the object, the vacuum. So I noticed that there was this vacuum whenever there was a loss. And it felt hollow. Strangely, this kept repeating itself. Then my mother's guru, Justice Dudar, passed away. And again, I felt this vacuum. So when I reached Chennai, and then I went with Eckhart to Pondicherry, I was having dinner with him, and I had this question on my mind. I asked him, I said, you know, Eckhart, I felt this vacuum when my dog died. I felt this vacuum when my grandmother died. And I always, whenever there's a loss, I sense a vacuum. So my question is, now make no mistake, Ganesh, this is a question from the mind. The mind asks questions. My question to Eckhart was that, Eckhart, the thought struck me. What would happen if everyone I loved, bar none, what would happen if everyone I loved died at the same time? He said, you tell me what you think would happen. I said, if everyone around me died at the same time, everyone I loved, there would be a vacuum all around. And he replied, that is what enlightenment is. So for your friend, on the manifest level, we feel alone, but the firm conviction that you are never alone. The divine principle has been guiding your life since your birth and will do so till the last breath. To have faith in that, the one and only, that is what hopefully guide him through this very difficult passage of time. All right. Are you there?
Yes, Guruji, I'm there.
All right.
Yeah, it's not only for him, it's something for me to the message that you have given, because I have so many loved ones and I haven't lost anyone until now.
Consider yourself blessed, Ganesh. Value them more. Value them more.
Thank you.
Yes, Sarthak.
Namaste, Ustaji. How have you been?
I'm good, thank you.
Well, the question for today is something based off the co correspondence we had last time when we were on here together. It was about receiving people in your consciousness and how everybody is an aspect of you and they're just kind of arising and dissolving within your own consciousness. Nothing is outside and apart from it. So I wanted you to speak a little bit about the receiving aspect, which really stirred something in me. So I wanted you to elaborate more on that, if you will.
Well, I don't know what else to say, but the fact is we cannot choose what enters our consciousness, right? For example, an incident happens and someone you don't like comes in front of you. Or let's say an incident which you didn't expect comes, it is already received into the consciousness. It appears to be external, but it is already what is. Now, the problem is we have a problem with what is. The average human being resists what is, what has entered the field of consciousness. The enlightened being does not resist that because it has already happened. Thereafter, I do what I think and feel I should do. But that first level of resistance, which is very natural to the ego, the defenses are up immediately. That has actually fallen apart because it is very clear that whatever is within my consciousness is already there, else it would not have been there. I hope that doesn't sound too abstract.
No, it doesn't. Makes a lot of sense.
You see, so if we just take an example that, the person who you are resisting again comes into your consciousness, whether as a thought or in actual physicality, enters your home or whatever, that has already become part of your consciousness. Now, we may or may not resonate with this person. There are some people who don't resonate with each other because there's no law that you resonate with everyone. But I have already accepted what is. Thereafter, I can say that, hey, look, no matter how much we try, we are not able to resolve what we set out to resolve. So let's appreciate and accept and see each other's point of view and how we are. So the tone changes, you see, it becomes more open, receptive, and friendly. It does not mean that you will transform all relationships in your life. That all depends on Rinanubandhan. But you are not fighting with what is. That is the only difference. You're not fighting with what is and creating discord through condemnation, blame, hatred, malice, ill will, spite, and so on. All those emotions are not operating. That is the beauty of it.
Thank you for your words. I appreciate them.
Thank you. Thank you, Sarta. Yes, Subhajit. I can't hear you. One sec. Yeah, can you say something? Sorry, I'm not able to hear you at all. Are you on mute by any chance? All right, we'll take another question and then come back to you. Hopefully, that situation will be sorted. Yes, Mutharasu.
Good morning, Gautam.
Good morning.
There are got a couple of questions. The first
Sure.
one, is, what is the role of grace for an aspirant in the path of Advaita?
Okay, beautiful question. An aspirant is on the path of Advaita only because of grace. That is the first step. Now, what is this grace? And how does grace operate? Grace starts operating when there is a total and complete surrender to that higher power. When I know that I can only use my intellect so much to live my life, as we were speaking with Jagjot earlier, you know, there's so many factors which are actually moving me and others in my life. When I realize that there's a grace operating, I can only think I understand life, but there's a far bigger thing happening in my life, and surrender to that, then grace starts operating itself. It is very true, you know, this cliche where they say you take one step towards God and God takes 10 steps towards you. It is very true. Taking one step towards God means not my will, O Lord, but thine be done. This will which I have polished and scrubbed and exercised and created muscles out of in my life to get ahead, get forward, get moving, give my opinions, this and that and all. When I realize that outcomes have never really been in my control, when I realize that I did something with one intention, something else happened, I stop putting this my will on a pedestal like I used to. And when I stop doing that and bow down to the divine will, grace, which is the divine will, starts operating. It is really quite simple, really simple. A full, complete, total surrender, thy will be done, is grace. Then that thy will, grace, is running the show. All right.
Yeah, thank you. Just one more question. This is like, you know, at important junctures, you know, like means while changing one in the career move from one particular job to another, what happens is from a commercial or a conventional viewpoint, it looks to everybody that that particular decision which I am taking is not appropriate. But something inside tells me, no, you don't worry about anything and then you do what you are thinking that will do good to you. But it happened not once, actually. It happened twice. Eh? But sometimes with so many people or everybody around me telling that what you are doing is not appropriate, you are thinking in staying some utopia or something like that and doing something. But something inside tells me, and then I do it and stay with it. Whatever good and bad comes, I just take it. But since everybody is saying, since I thought I will ask you what I am doing this particular thing, you know, which is coming inside from me, you know, that you don't go for that, you go for this, which is totally inappropriate to the present in a world view. Twice it had happened, actually. But I just want your view on that, please.
You see, I would like to congratulate you on this, because it means you are not wearing a mask and trying to go by what society feels. Now, make no mistake, people have good intentions. They don't wish harm upon you. They are sharing their perspective and their point of view. The main thing is here, I'm following my heart, so to speak, as what you're explaining. My intuition tells me to do this, and so no matter what society is saying, I'm doing it. The main thing is, am I okay to face the consequences of my actions? Knowing that society feels the other way, my intuition is telling me to do things a certain way, am I at peace with the outcome of my action? Now, if the answer is yes, then really, this is the kind of life worth living. Because then I have the conviction that I followed my inner light, my inner guide, in spite of what public was telling me. So I've been true to myself. And so what if the consequences or the outcome was not what I expected? I still rest in the peace that I did what I felt I should do. then you are a man at peace, and it's very beautiful to live life that way rather than conforming to how people want you to live. So what happens is buddhi, intellect kicks in. I want to do something a certain way. The janta is telling me don't do it that way. I use my intellect. Are they right? Are they wrong? What are the pluses? What are the minuses? But yet, rather than bend to that view, I ask myself, no, this is still what I feel. In spite of getting everyone's feedback, this is what I feel like doing. Knowing that I too am making my decision based on my genetics and conditioning, which God made. So it's truly not my decision. It appears to be mine. To the public, certainly it appears to be mine. But deep down, I know I am being moved to make this decision, as you yourself are saying. A force is propelling me to make this decision. Now, when I know that this does not guarantee the outcome, and I'm willing to face whatever the outcome is, then I'm at peace. That is all. Does that make sense?
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you very much. Yeah.
Thank you. That was very nice. Anything else you'd like to ask or add?
No, just if I want to add something, actually, like that what inner thing, that voice, what it is saying not to do, no? It's not that as sort of in a hunch I take that, actually. Means daily I read Bhagavad Gita as instructed by my guru, actually. And I somehow get, I try to, you know, where do I stand in vis-a-vis the teaching that is told? And, you know, it reinforces what comes from inside with what is being told. After a lot of means, I take long time in deciding it, because it's going to alter my total family and, you know, my own future, actually. But still, I stick on to it. You know, I really don't know what will evolve subsequently, but as of now, I am at peace, actually. Yeah. Thank you.
That is the main thing. You said it. That is it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Very much. Yeah.
Yes, Dipali.
Namaste, sir.
Namaste.
Hope you're doing well.
Thank you.
I wanted to clarify that since everything is predestined, so we are not the doer of our actions. I mean, is that right? I mean, no one is the doer of that actions. So we have to get the rid of that feeling that I'm not the doer.
No, you see, everything is predestined, but we do not know what it is that is predestined, right? So in life,
yes,
in daily living, we have to take decisions. That is how we move ahead in life. Every time we have to take a decision. Now, when we realize that our decision, which we thought is my decision, when we realize that this my decision is based on factors which are beyond my control, I did not create my conditioning, God did. From a baby and thereon, through my teenage years, I have received a bombardment of conditioning from society, in the economic group I was in, geographical location, so on and so forth. All this has shaped me. My genetics have shaped me. And on the basis of my genes and conditioning, I take a decision. But now I know I am not the doer in the sense it is not my decision. Only in that sense, yet decisions I must take. So when I take a decision without this burden of doership, that my decision, and there's a certain outcome, if the outcome is positive, pleasure will arise, but no pride and arrogance, because I know it's not truly my decision. So pleasure will arise, the outcome was positive, but no pride or arrogance. And if the outcome is negative, disappointment will arise, but no guilt or shame, not my decision. Absence of pride and arrogance, guilt and shame, the foundations of which is doership, when these are absent, I am left with peace of mind. An outcome happens. Now, whether positive or negative, since I know I am not the doer, I am at peace. That is the only difference. It is not about trying to get rid of anything. It is not about, because life is predestined, I'm not the doer. No such thing. Predestined is a concept. Everything is a concept. It is just to expose the sense of doership which has been ingrained in the ego by the will of the source, and which is causing suffering, psychological suffering to me. When this starts getting exposed, then the light of peace dawns. That is what happens.
So it's basically the detachment. We get, of course, we do our work and all of the things, but we don't get so much attached.
That happens by and by, automatically. When this sense of doership diminishes, I will automatically find I'm not as attached to the outcomes as I used to be. Earlier, I had high expectations because I thought I was the doer. I must get what I am intending to get. But life has shown me repeatedly, outcome has never been in your control. Sometimes you get what you want, many times you don't. So because now I have understood how life is designed, I have understood the concept of doership, it is natural to start getting detached from outcomes.
Yes. And also that neither other people are the doer of their actions. So we like stop judging them or reacting more to them, because we know that they are also not the doer of their actions.
Exactly, exactly. That's what starts happening on its own. It's very beautiful, actually, when that starts happening, because, I mean, earlier we were having a problem with people because we invested them with power, as Goldsmith says. When we give up this belief that there's a power apart from God, which is, again, it's so beautifully expressed in this, not two, when there's only one power, life really, the whole dimension changes. You'll probably, the person whom you were judging earlier, the next time the person comes in front of you or you think about the person, a smile may come on your face. Whom was I really judging?
It's like seeing through the new lens, seeing the world through the new lens.
Yes, absolutely. That is it. Or one could
yes.
Seeing the world through the third eye, the invisible eye, the eye of Shiva. Earlier, I was seeing the world through the eyes of duality, physical eyes, physical world. Now I am seeing it through the eye of singularity, the eye of singularity, not two. The same force, the same consciousness, the one and only, not two. So not only new lens, new eye. The third eye of Shiva starts operating, means it's open, no? That is what starts happening. Really, it is the most underrated gift, because we can't see it. It is operating in the subtle invisible. Yes, sir. Subhajit, shall we attempt once more to listen to you?
Yeah, can you hear me now?
I can.
Yeah, hey, thank you. So, namaste Gautamji, this is the first time I'm interacting with you. So I'm really glad that I got the opportunity to, you know, ask you this question. So ever since I started my spiritual journey, and I've been listening to lots of different spiritual gurus, taken some courses also over the last 6 to 7 years, I sometimes find myself suffering from a divided mind. Okay, and I see a stress building inside me. So in a at the particular moment, right? So some people have said, some gurus have said that you just need to do at that moment, it's about karma again. At any moment, you need to do what needs to be done. And Rameshji also in his videos, and you also have said the same thing. I mean, that just do what you have to do. It's all God's will, it's all destiny. But the conditioning that I have grown up with since my childhood, and I can see that, is that whatever you do, you have to do it in the best possible way. So that doership is ingrained. And I understand all that intellectually. But at that, at every moment, for example, in a corporate environment, at every moment I have a doubt. A doubt suddenly comes to my mind in a particular situation that whether this action, what action I'm going to take, is this action going to keep me on the spiritual path, or is it going to take me away from the spiritual path? Or is this action going to, for example, I know that an action feeds on the subconscious, and if I have to clean my subconscious mind, if I do take the action that takes me in the opposite direction, then it's status quo, right? So that doership, I'm not able to transcend that doership, that doubt, that stress, that am I doing the right action from the spiritual progress growth point of view, or am I taking the wrong action? For example, in a corporate environment, if I'm interacting with my manager or my reportees, sometimes I find myself doing things which otherwise the spiritual gurus would say, this would take you in the wrong direction. For example, it betrays my attachment to the to job. For example, if I'm asking for something, right, I start feeling guilty. Why am I asking for it? I should just, you know, that karmanya vadhikaraste mahaphalesho kadachana. So there's so much knowledge already in my mind that my moment to moment action, sometimes that doubt is dividing my mind, and is I'm unable to transcend it. So I need your help.
See, you have said a lot, and it is the predicament of many people. But I'd like to first clarify a few points. One is that if you are hearing too many people, there's going to be conflict in the mind. See, the truth is, one, the expressions are different. But if you start getting stuck in different expressions, then the nature of the mind will start comparing, judging, figuring things out, and it can become a big burden on the mind. So it is better to stick to one and go deep into that. That is the first point I would like to express. Otherwise, the burden on the mind is too much.
Yeah, see, I can see that, yeah.
Yes, as Maharaj said, you don't get water by digging shallow wells all over the land, but one deep well. So that is the first thing I'd like to say, that in your journey, in your spiritual journey, if you have a guru, if you've had many gurus or drawn to many teachings, there's no harm in that. But choose one which you feel has really struck a chord or touched you deep. Stay with that. By all means, imbibe what you want from the others. It doesn't mean you have to stop all that entirely, but you know where your center is. This is very important. To know where my center is will save you a lot of angst and grief. This I must draw your attention to. It will help you. It will go a long way. Now, you see, you are in a corporate job, you're in the world out there. Let me rectify something here. There's nothing which is not spiritual. Life is a learning. Being in the corporate world is about relationships. My family is relationships. Friends are relationships. The beggar on the street is a relationship. There is nothing which is not spiritual. So to say that, oh, I may take a decision which may not be good for my spiritual journey is a big contradiction. You see, now I'll give you one example, not directly related to what you are saying. Supposing I'm investing in the stock market, okay, and I have a portfolio of shares. Now, one of the shares is a company which is into making cigarettes. And my broker says, you must put money in this share, it's going to shoot up 10 times. Now, I have to decide for myself whether I need that money or not. If deep down I feel, look, my conscious mind tells me, don't put money in this thing because you believe cigarettes are harmful. I have to take that decision, knowing I will forego the opportunity of a multiplier stock, right? So I have to use my mind and judgment. But will I say, oh, it is not spiritual to put money in this stock, so I should not do it? I'm passing judgment then. There is nothing that is not spiritual. Yes, my conduct with people at work, how I am with them, are they colleagues or have I labeled all of them as I like this one, don't like that one, and so on and so forth. My conduct with people in the corporate world will reveal a lot to me. My teacher would say, those who are working, because he was the manager of the Bank of India, those who are working are extremely gifted because they can see the teaching in action.
It's a fertile ground. Corporate world is a fertile
It
ground for
is a very
weaknesses.
fertile ground, yeah. Now, I may reach a point in my corporate journey where I feel that I've learned the lessons I had to. And then I take a call, do I exit it? Do I stay? That is a different matter. But this conflict which you are having about certain decisions not being spiritual. Now, for example, if I have a colleague who has worked harder than me and I am getting all the credit, I would tell my seniors, hey, I just want to be fair and express my point of view. Right. So it all depends in each situation. How aware are we of what we are doing, why we are doing it, what is our motivation? And by all means, if we feel that something is going against my conscience, then I express myself and don't do it.
And but if I'm not able to summon the courage to do it, do the right thing, as you say, I have to be willing to face the consequences
Of
also,
course.
and accept that as God's will, that God probably wanted me to
No.
make that mistake.
See, there are no mistakes.
Okay.
There are no mistakes, only lessons to be learned. If I am timid by nature, I have to accept God made me timid. You see, everything is a learning. What is a mistake? I get an outcome which I wish I didn't. I label that a mistake. I did the wrong thing. Mistake. This
To me,
mistake.
mistake is that I am left with the feeling that I have digressed from the from my path, from the spiritual path, which is taking me in the opposite direction. To me, that is the mistake. That
Nothing is taking you in the opposite direction.
is
It appears that way.
okay.
You see, once the step is taken on the spiritual journey, it is a process of no return. Rest assured about that. Someone unaware may not be even asking what you are asking me today. Look at it that way. So, based on your blueprint, your journey, these situations will come up. You will learn from them. You will question them. That is all part of the process. As Maharaj would say, the road is the goal. The goal is not something at the end. The road is the goal. And by, you will reach your own conclusions. You will get your own answers. Now, I would like to digress a bit, coming back to focusing on one thing. You know, Ramakrishna Paramhans expressed it very beautifully. When I think someone asked him that out of all the gurus, how do I know who is my guru? And he replied saying that you go into a sweet shop, many sweets, all are beautiful, all taste lovely, but there's that one sweet which you keep buying. That is the one. So you have to ask yourself, where do I find the sweetness which I keep going back to? And then stay with that. All right. Next
Thank
time,
you.
I would be happy if you could share some specific examples in the corporate world where you feel this conflict, because that would help me address it better, you see.
I will gather some examples, because the corporate world, as I said, also helped me a lot to learn about myself and to, in fact, for the last 5 years, my colleagues themselves have observed changes, and they have commented that, you know, you must be doing something right, that you are much better, easier to deal with, much more like zen-like and all. But I can see that there is so much, like sometimes I argue about certain things, sometimes I lose my patience, sometimes I lose my calm, or sometimes I'm thinking about, say, promotion, for example, you know, and I feel, I am left with the feeling that, am I following Krishna's philosophy? I mean, because I believe that, because I'm a big fan of Lord Krishna and big fan of Bhagavad Gita, and I really, really want to follow that path, like live it. But sometimes in the corporate world, I feel like this, if I stay in the corporate world, I may not be able to live it fully, even though there are many opportunities which are helping me learn about myself. But if I continue staying in the corporate world, it is probably I'm going to be stuck somewhere. You know, that is the, like, a kind of
one sec.
Okay.
Krishna was in the Mahabharata war. He didn't say, I should leave this war now, Baba, I have had enough.
But that was an ideas
in the heart of the war.
Yeah.
So you see, if you are following Krishna to the T, your peace has to be found through it, not away from it. Yes, why are we in the corporate world? I was taught this in school. The motive of business is profit. So supposing you as an individual feel I have reached my financial goals and I no longer need to be in the corporate world anymore, I'd rather do other things, whatever it may be, social service, enjoying time, whatever. At that time, I take that decision. Fair enough. But to wish the corporate world away, I think that would be injustice to Krishna's teachings.
Not wish it away, just to doubting whether I should still be here if I'm on the spiritual path.
The understanding is, till you are meant to be there, you will be there. And when you are not meant to be there, Krishna will take you away from there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the surrender means that I'm wait for Krishna to take that decision, instead of me trying to kind of think about it. Why should I think when he's thinking?
Yes, you could say that.
Okay.
True surrender is surrendering to this higher force which knows best.
Till then,
till I have the doubt, I continue. All right.
Thank you for the insight. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I enjoyed that, because you see, my background is also corporate. I have been in the corporate world for decades. So, and it really, my teacher would love to listen to my stories in the corporate world, dealing with clients, dealing with suppliers, dealing with crisis, because then you know how much the teaching has been imbibed.
Now, I think that is why your words resonate with me a lot, because I find myself kind of from a similar background. That's why it also resonates a lot, because I know that what you are saying is not from some fantasy, you know.
Exactly.
Real life, yeah.
And one thing I figured out for myself, that the corporate world is a field of Rinanubandhan. All my relationships, be it with my staff, be it with clients, suppliers, whatever it may be, was nothing but relationships which were destined to happen, to come together. So I started looking at it. What is my spiritual growth is not about what I'm doing is right or wrong in the corporate world. What is my relationship with my profits and losses, with my suppliers who are always delaying the consignments, with the clients who are very testy and difficult to deal with? What is my relationship with them? In what light do I see them? And when I started seeing them through the eyes of non-doership, Luckily, I came across the teaching, like I said, when I was 29, 30, at the peak of my career. The whole dimension changed, you know. I mean, to the extent that I closed my advertising business 20 years ago, and I still get gifts from my clients.
Yeah, that definitely. I mean, we can make a heaven out of that place where we are working. I mean, regardless of the nature or the this fundamental characteristic of the workplace, and that has definitely, it is much more a heaven for me now than it was 5 years back.
Beautiful.
Stress about everything, but still, I see that there are certain holes or certain potholes where I can really fall if I'm not careful. But maybe I should not think so much and just leave it to God, to just let me do whatever I'm doing and then learn from it and then
You
maybe.
see, you are not thinking too much. You are being made to think too much.
It's God's will
Don't
then.
worry about thinking too much. That's
Yeah.
the problem. We always have this voice in our head which is second guessing and always trying to monitor us, self-correct us. Let it be. You have been gifted with a mind which thinks, so be it. You will reach your own conclusions.
Yeah. Thank you very much. I will let the others ask questions. Next time, I will again seize the opportunity.
I think
Thank
we
you.
have time for one more question, maybe. Let's see how short it is or long it is. Yes, Meena.
Sairam Gautam ji, Sairam. This is the first time I am talking to you. I watched the episodes of you with Nikhil ji. And for many of my questions in my mind, I used to get the answer from your sessions, episodes in that. And what I want to ask you today is, I had an unshakable faith over Baba before 2021. I have two children, and by 2021, I lost my husband in COVID. He was also a very staunch Baba devotee, and we live in Dubai. Before going to our hometown in India, every year we visit Shirdi, and Baba is like my father, mother, everything. I had a very unshakable faith. After that, after my husband's loss, so much struggles and so many things myself and my children are facing. And I had the question in my mind, I love you so much, Baba. And like this, I am facing now, maybe because of my karma. Because of my karma, I am facing like this. Can't you save my life like that? My husband is my life, and for my children too. Without him, we are hated by our family members and treated very, very badly by our family members too. And very highly insecure feeling and everything. Now, after that, also, he visited Shirdi, and Baba is my only refuge. You know, he is with me. Now, he has given me permission to ask you this. Because I hesitated a lot to ask. So many times I want to talk to you, but I couldn't. The thing is, Gautam ji, I feel now I have faith in Baba, but that faith is not so strong as before. My mind feels anything may happen as per your karma like that. Will Baba come and protect you like that? That question is in my mind now. It's not that strong faith before. That's the childish faith, like the child has over the mother. That faith, that type of faith I had over Baba. He is my everything. I don't like to come out of Shirdi like that type of person I am now. Even after giving so many darshans this time, I'm feeling even if I take so many darshans, my life has gone, Baba. I don't have that same strong faith on you now. There is some line, a barrier between you and me now. This is what Gautam, I want to ask. I want to have that same unshakable faith over Baba now again. How could I keep that?
You see, Meena, I'm sorry to hear about your predicament, especially your husband's passing and what you are facing with the people. But you have to ask yourself, Meena, why is my love conditional? Does my love for Baba mean I can demand something in return? What kind of a faith is this? Did Baba guarantee you that because you love him, because you go to Shirdi, that you will not face challenges in your life? Or did he not say that through all your ups and downs, I am with you? So why this faith, which is being withdrawn? As you said, a line is now drawn. Who has drawn the line? Meena, with an expectation from Baba, has drawn this line now, has questioned her faith, because how could he do this to her? He didn't. As I said before, we are all here to face our karmas. Meena, what would you say to someone who is in Gaza who has lost their entire family with one bombing they had nothing to do with? Wife, children, uncles, everyone. Now, how do you feel? You lost one husband. I know it's traumatic. But do you see how consumed we get by our own life story and what happens to us? And then, because we have faith in the Almighty, as expressed by Baba, we feel I have loved him 100%, and so he must love me back 100%. Why not think the other way? That through my darkest hours, no matter how things appear to be, I have a faith, unconditional faith, that whatever happens is the will of God and has been ordained for me in this lifetime. And may that force give me the strength to deal with each situation as it arises. You see, I remember when my father passed away when I was 14. My mother, who was a housewife till then, was told to go to his office and sit in his chair. Someone who didn't even know how to sign a check, who was having the burden of three young children in their teenage years. And she said that, I told Shiva, you have placed me in this situation. Now you do what you want to do with me. This is the prayer. Baba, you have placed me here. Now you give me the strength day by day to do what you feel best. I am your instrument through whom it will happen. So what happens is we start wallowing in self-pity and feeling bad for ourselves. These are all the way the ego operates. It's nothing wrong, Meena. But we have to get out of this loop. And we have to get out of this feeling that my life is going to be fine because I have 100% faith in Baba. What has to be faced has to be faced. And why not, through your darkest hours, have this conviction and assurance that Baba, I know that you are with me even through this part of my life. If you ask me, that is the kind of faith Baba is looking for. That is why perhaps you've been drawn to this teaching of Advaita, and that is why you are here today.
Uttam ji, I understand what you are telling. My son was studying fourth standard at that time when he lost his father. And I know that Baba is the only one who is with us now. I know that. But that love towards Baba, I can't give a full 100%. I love Baba so much. But that barrier, you know, I'm telling you that line, My husband is everything to me. He only took me to Shirdi. Even I don't know about the bank matters. I don't know to sign the check, everything, nothing I don't know. Yeah, though I have studied my master's, I fully depend on my husband only. After he passed away only, I came to know the world. The world is like this.
Meena, welcome to realizations about the world. You know, people who owed my father money, luckily he had maintained a book. And we knew who owed him money, and some friends, when we approached them, said, oh, we didn't owe him money. So I got a realization of the world when I was very young. You are getting it now. Because earlier everything was so comfortable, so beautiful, a bed of roses, and now the carpet has been pulled from beneath your feet. This too is the world, Meena. I know perhaps my words are sounding harsh at this time, but you can rest assured there's only compassion behind them. We have to be exposed to the duality of life and face what comes our way. Maharaj said, what comes unasked is what is meant for you. What comes unasked is what is meant for you. And this line which you are constantly talking about, it is the person who thinks they are holding the pen which is drawing the line that is the problem. It is not Baba. Will that one drop that pen? That is the wall of separation that separates me from you. This is what Baba's words are. Bring down that wall that separates me from you. Baba is telling you to drop that pen.
Sure, Gautamji, sure, I'll try to. I'll try. Definitely, I'll try.
Take care and best wishes with you and your family.
Thank you, Gautamji. Sai Ram.
Sai Ram. Okay, we'll end the session here. And those who have not been able to ask, please do come back on the next Zoom. And I will just sit in silence with you all for a couple of minutes now.
Thank you.